Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Part 27. The Rival.
Murasaki! Murasaki!
The young girl's voice was muffled as it shouted from outside the bedroom door. Inside, nothing stirred. Next came the pounding on that same door, and more shouts of,
Murasaki! Murasaki!
Something finally stirred under a pile of blankets on a bed surrounded by books, tools, and a variety of electronic toys and devices that had been either taken apart or were partly built. Perhaps the answer depended on one's pessimistic or optimistic nature. When nothing more happened, the doorknob rattled and the girl marched into the room. She weaved her way through the debris scattered across her path, until she stood right beside the bed.
Murasaki!
Silence. Then, two hands appeared from under the covers, grabbed a pillow, and launched it right into the girl's face. Then the hands retracted, and whatever creature was beneath the blankets rolled over, likely facing in the opposite direction of the nuisance that had arrived.
Fine. You don't want to get up? Mom says that she'll let me go in your place. She said they might make an exception and let me choose and go on a journey instead.
The blankets exploded off the bed, and a boy sat up straight, his hair sticking up in all sorts of directions.
I'm awake! I'm awake!
The girl put a hand on her hip and rolled her eyes.
Yeah, I figured. Now hurry up and get ready. Mom says you should be leaving for the gym in 5 minutes.
The girl darted back across the room, hopping over the various contraptions.
5 minutes?
The boy exclaimed.
Why didn't you wake me up sooner?
The girl stopped at the doorway and looked at her older brother.
Mom woke you up an hour ago.
Then she left the room, and the boy could hear her footsteps thud downstairs. It took another half a minute for the boy to get his brain firing as he blinked the sleep out of his eyes. Then his clock came into view, and he was reminded that he was about to be late. He leapt out of bed, and his bare foot landed on one of the incomplete projects. The pain shot through him, and he started hopping on one foot for about 2.5 hops. He nearly landed his good foot on one of his tools, and in avoiding it, he lost his balance and slammed his head into his dresser on his way to the floor. He let out an exasperated sigh and seriously considered going back to sleep for just a minute. But this was his big day. He was about to become a Pokemon trainer and start his adventure. About 3 minutes later, Murasaki was dressed and downstairs. His mom tried to offer him breakfast, but the boy said he didn't have time and started out the front door. The collar of his shirt suddenly started to choke him out as something had snagged it.
You're just going to leave without giving your mother a kiss?
But Mom, I'm going to be late.
And whose fault is that?
Yours, since you're not letting me leave.
Murasaki's mother cocked an eyebrow.
Seriously?
Then her eyes drifted up to the kid's hair.
And look at your hair. It's a disaster.
The boy leaned in and gave his mom a quick kiss and a hug. He knew that if he let her go on any longer, there would be plenty more wrong with his clothing or cleanliness, and he didn't want to miss out on getting the Pokemon of his choice.
Love you, Mom. Bye.
Murasaki hurried out the door, and his mother and younger sister followed until they were just outside.
Come back right after,
the mother called out. Running as fast as he could, Murasaki had a ways to go to get all the way across Celadon City to reach Erika's gym. He knew there were others showing up to pick their Pokemon too, and he really hoped that he wouldn't miss out on all the good ones. Bursting into the gym, Murasaki paid zero attention to all the beautiful flowers and other plants that are grown there in what seemed to double as a greenhouse. This proved to be a problem when he decided to try and take a shortcut instead of following what seemed to be a meandering and inefficient path to Erika, the gym leader. As soon as his foot landed onto a bed of flowers, a nearby vial plume aimed its petals at the boy and sprayed spores into the air. Murasaki waved them off and wiped at his face where some had clung as he continued his race through the gym. It was about 5 steps later that he felt the effects of the spores. His legs weren't working properly, and 3 stumbling steps later his knees buckled. A moment later he fell onto his face, and despite being awake and aware of his situation, he couldn't seem to move at all. He noticed people on occasion walk right by him. Nobody seemed to offer help or pay any attention. His mouth wouldn't work, so he couldn't cry out for help. Occasionally he managed a groan, but it didn't do him any good. He could hear the excited voices of other trainers as they chatted away about their new Bulbasaur or Bellsprout. One girl even had a Tangela. After what seemed an eternity, Murasaki was rolled onto his back. He was staring up at a very pretty girl who looked sort of familiar to him. She knelt down beside the boy and poured a liquid into his mouth, and soon feeling began to return to his limbs. The first thing that he seemed to be able to move was his mouth, and so, in sort of a slurred speech, he asked,
"What happened?"
"You didn't heed the signs,"
the girl answered.
"And so you were hit with some stun spore from one of the vial plume in the garden."
"Oh. Not who are you?"
"Erika, the gym leader."
Murasaki knew he was in trouble now. The gym leader herself, the one handing out Pokemon, was probably not happy he had broken the rules. He was really nervous he wasn't going to get a Pokemon now. On the plus side, he could feel his tongue loosen up and he could flex his fingers and toes now.
"Sorry, are there any Pokemon left?"
Erika just stared at Murasaki for a while. He felt his heart sink at the lack of an answer. Even if the answer was yes, she was likely preparing to tell him he wouldn't get one.
"There is one, so you won't really get a choice in which Pokemon you get to have."
Hope returned to Murasaki. Sure, there was only the one, but he was still going to get a Pokemon, right?
"Which is unfortunate. You see, when a trainer chooses a Pokemon, that immediately creates a connection, which ideally evolves into a close bond, but when there is no choice, there can be resentment. You won't have that boost in connecting with the Pokemon."
Murasaki's eyes widened with fear. It sounded like she wasn't going to let him have the Pokemon after all.
"Please, I really want a Pokemon. I promise, I'll love it, whatever it is."
Erika frowned and thought.
"Well, I can let you take it, but I'll expect you to live up to your word, because all Pokemon should be treated well, and I don't want it neglected as soon as you find something you think is more interesting."
"Of course, I'll take really good care of it."
Nodding, Erika pulled out a Pokeball and set it next to the semi-paralyzed boy.
"All right then, here you are. Good luck, and know, I'll be watching."
With that, Erika left. It was another minute before Murasaki could even grab the Pokeball. And once he could, he just looked over it, slightly afraid to open it. As long as it wasn't open, the Pokemon could be anything, but once he saw what was inside, then he had to accept whatever Pokemon popped out. He really didn't want it to be an execute. 10 more minutes went by, and Murasaki could finally get up and move. It took another couple of minutes for his walking to become normal as all the paralysis finally left his system. On his way out of the gym, he saw the vial plume that had stunned him, and he stuck his tongue out at it.
"Thanks a lot."
The vial plume ignored Murasaki's sarcastic comment and continued trying to mend the area the boy had damaged by his attempted shortcut. Once outside, Murasaki thought it was time to learn just what Pokemon he had. After all, he would need to know before he wound up in a battle. So he tossed the ball out, and there was a flash of light as his Pokemon emerged. The little creature looked up at its trainer with wide eyes. Murasaki smiled down at it, but then the Pokemon took in a deep breath, closed its eyes tight, and aimed its leafy parts at the boy.
"Oh no, not another stun spore."
Part 31. The Rival. Part 2. Murasaki quickly shielded his face with his arms. But nothing happened. The Pokemon standing on the ground before him made a small cry. Carefully, the boy peeked through his arms to see his new partner, an Oddish, and saw it waggling the leaves sprouting out the top of it. The Pokemon was trying really hard to do something. Still, no spores came.
You can't do stun spore yet, can you?
The leaves wilted down around its little body, and it stared at the ground.
Hey, that's okay. You'll learn eventually. And really, right now, I think it's probably good you haven't.
The Pokemon looked up at Murasaki with a curious expression.
Look, I was already stunned once, and we're partners now, so you shouldn't be stunning me at all.
The boy stepped closer to the Oddish and extended his hand toward it, palm up.
Sound good?
The Oddish just stared at the hand for a bit and then looked back and forth between it and Murasaki's face. After a few more seconds of seemingly trying to decide how to handle the situation, the Pokemon took a step toward the hand. Then it tried to stun spore him again. Murasaki rolled his eyes and sighed.
Oh, come on, just climb up.
He pushed his hand closer, and the Oddish panicked and stumbled backward. Shaking his head, Murasaki gently scooped up the Pokemon and placed him on his shoulder.
There, how's that?
The Oddish immediately tried to stun the boy again. Murasaki's mouth twitched upward in amusement. Shaking his head again, he patted the Oddish and then started back toward home, just as his mom had told him to. He was still a couple houses down when Murasaki's sister saw him and started announcing it loudly for their mom to hear. The woman soon joined her daughter as they waited for the boy to reach them. Murasaki was excited to share his misadventure into getting his Oddish, and his sister was just excited to hear. What the boy failed to notice was that behind his mother's smile, there was a mix of fear and loss. The three entered the house as Murasaki explained how he had been stunned by a gloom and was just barely allowed to take the little Oddish. His mother lightly reprimanded him for being so careless and warned him he should pay better attention once he heads out on his journey.
Kind of odd for your Pokemon to be riding on your shoulder, isn't it?
Murasaki's sister asked. The boy shrugged.
Well, it is called an Oddish, isn't it?
I suppose.
But that isn't what you're going to keep calling it, is it?
His mother asked.
You'll be giving it a proper nickname.
Murasaki shrugged again.
Maybe, if I think of anything good.
His mother eyed him skeptically.
Murasaki?
The woman warned.
What?
I thought you promised Erica you were going to take good care of that Pokemon. It seems you're already losing interest.
Looking a little sheepish, Murasaki took a sip of the tea his mother had set out in front of him. Then he took a bite of the lunch she prepared.
Yeah, no, I'll name it. Maybe something like Stunner or something, since he keeps trying to hit me with Stun Spore.
At those very words, Oddish once again stretched its leaves at Murasaki and squinted hard. Still nothing happened. The boy's sister giggled in amusement.
Well,
his mother started.
Where are you planning to go first? You're trying your luck with Erica here in town, or are you headed to one of the other gyms?
Murasaki scratched at his head, hesitant to answer.
Actually, I was thinking I would go to Lavender Town first.
What? Why?
His little sister asked.
I want to visit the Pokemon Tower.
His mother looked confused.
The Pokemon Cemetery? Why in the world would you go there first?
Oh, I know.
The little girl exclaimed, excited she knew the answer.
He always wanted a Ghastly. He's going to try and catch one.
The look on his mother's face told him she disapproved. He knew she was thinking that getting a Pokemon he thought was cool would distract him from caring for Oddish. The poor grass Pokemon was already on the way to being replaced.
That's not true. Exactly.
Oh, really?
His mother raised an eyebrow.
I want a Gengar, actually.
Uh-huh. So you're still going there to catch a Ghastly.
Well, yeah, most likely. But she said that's what I really wanted, and it isn't.
The woman sighed.
I can't stop you, Murasaki. You know that. But I would make sure to take extra good care of that Oddish. Otherwise, I'd hate to see what happens to you when you finally challenge Erica.
Murasaki didn't answer and wisely finished his food in silence. He knew he would just dig himself into a deeper hole if he tried to justify himself. He also understood what his mom was saying and thought she could be right. But he wasn't sure, and really, If he had powerful enough Pokemon, what could Erika really do to him anyway? Before long, Murasaki was packed and giving goodbye hugs to his mother and sister.
I expect you to come back and visit often,
his mother said. Murasaki nodded, waved goodbye, and headed out on his very own Pokemon adventure. Part 34. The Mad Mankey. Lavender Town was to the east of Celadon City, and so that was the direction Murasaki headed. Between here and there, however, was Saffron City, and so he would have to pass through there first. There was a gym there, but it was run by Sabrina. Seeing as she specialized in psychic Pokemon, it further justified Murasaki's goal to get himself a ghost Pokemon first. As Murasaki cut through the grass toward Saffron, he was immediately set upon by a Mankey. The Pokemon was crying out wildly and swiping at the boy. It was quite a surprise, and Murasaki nearly fell over, backing up as fast as he could. Then Murasaki fumbled for his Pokeball and dropped it before realizing his odd little friend was still riding around on his shoulder.
Oh, right. Onish, go!
The little plant leapt off his trainer's shoulder and ran to intercept the Mankey, charging forward. It almost ran right by the Oddish, not even noticing the little thing amongst the tall grass around it. But then Oddish attacked. Its leaves waggled a little as if blown by a gentle breeze, and the Mankey slowed and looked down. Its eyes narrowed at the little Oddish as it felt some of its life drain away, and it attacked the smaller Pokemon. The kick from the Mankey sent the Oddish bouncing away, but it didn't stop the plant from continuing to draw energy from its opponent. As it continued to draw health away, the Mankey grew more and more furious and continued to rage against the Oddish. Murasaki was getting nervous. He could see that his Oddish was getting worn out, but so was the Mankey. He knew he was going to have to decide to keep trying for the win or to pull his Pokemon back before he got too hurt. Then he remembered what Erika and his mother had said about taking care of the Oddish. Sighing, he reached for the Pokeball to have his Oddish return. But the Pokeball wasn't on his belt. He had forgotten that he had dropped it at the beginning of the fight. He whirled around looking for it in the tall grass.
Where did it go?
He asked out loud, starting to panic. He started crawling around to search and hoped he could find it before it was too late. There was another loud, angry cry from the Mankey, and Murasaki poked his head up to see what was happening. As he suspected, the Mankey was making another lunge for his Oddish, who didn't look like he could take another hit. But about 3 steps away from the plant, the Mankey's knee suddenly buckled, and the angry Pokemon crashed hard into the dirt. The boy stared for half a moment, wondering if the Mankey was going to get up again, but then realized that if it did, it would be best if Oddish wasn't still out there.
Come on, Oddish, come back here.
Slowly, the Pokemon turned and looked at its trainer. The Pokemon looked like it was barely standing.
Right, you stay there and I'll come get you.
Instantly, Murasaki could see the relief on his Pokemon's face. He marched over, but, as he got closer, he slowed down and kept a sharp eye on Mankey, worried it would pop up at any moment. Then it clicked in his head that maybe, since it is laying there and weak, he should catch the thing. And that's when he realized he didn't have any empty Pokeballs. He had totally forgot to purchase any. He sighed heavily as he picked up his weary Pokemon.
All right, buddy. We'll go back into town, patch you up, and while we're there, I should definitely go by.
The Mankey leapt up with a cry and went for Murasaki again, but without thinking, the boy quickly kicked his foot out and managed to hit the Mankey square in the nose. It flew backward with a shocked look in its huge eyes. The boy winced, realizing he probably shouldn't have done that. He looked around quick to see if anyone saw and breathed a sigh of relief that they hadn't.
Let's go before any more trouble comes along, huh?
The Oddish nodded. Back in Celadon, Murasaki entered the Pokemon Center and stepped up to the counter. Then he placed the Pokemon down, and the nurse gave the boy a quizzical look.
I'm sorry, but can you put your Pokemon in its Pokeball first?
Murasaki blinked.
Oh, dang it! I left it in the grass.
The nurse sighed.
So, put it in a new one then?
I would, But look, I'm just getting started. I forgot to buy Pokeballs before leaving, and then I was attacked by Mankey.
Putting a hand up, the nurse was about to try to speak again, but Murasaki ignored her and just plowed on.
And then I dropped his Pokeball when I was going to release him, but I forgot he was on my shoulder, and so then I tried to find it, but my Oddish was getting beat up by the Mankey.
Enough!
Murasaki stopped, his mouth still open as he looked at the annoyed woman across the counter from him.
I will look after your Oddish while you go to the shop and get some Pokeballs. Then come back and we can get everything all squared away.
The boy nodded.
Yes, ma'am.
Good. Now run along and hurry back.
He nodded again and took off for the department store where he knew he could find the shop he needed. However, almost as soon as he left the center, he noticed a man and woman in dark clothing with a large letter R on the front of their shirts. They felt off to the boy and his curiosity was piqued, so he followed them from a distance. Upon reaching the game corner of town, the two R's entered the main arcade where people gambled away their money. Murasaki gave it a minute or two before entering after them, and he regretted the wait almost immediately. The boy couldn't find them anywhere, even as he walked down every aisle. It was as if they had simply vanished into thin air. Murasaki thought that maybe there was another exit somewhere, but he couldn't find it, and if there was one, then why would two people enter a building just to leave another way?
Unless they knew they were being followed,
he spoke quietly to himself. Just then, the front door made a ringing noise and someone entered. He wore an R on the front of his shirt, too, and he was walking right toward Murasaki. Part 37. Distractions. The man with the R on his shirt walked right up to Murasaki and then knocked into the kid's arm as he continued past him. Watch it, kid! Taking the advice of the man, Murasaki did watch. He watched the rude person walk back to the place and speak to someone there, and then a secret door opened up, and the man vanished through it.
What the?
Murasaki quickly covered his mouth, realizing he shouldn't say anything. He backed up behind one of the gambling machines and hoped the person, apparently standing guard, hadn't noticed. He climbed up onto a nearby stool and started playing around with the machine as if he were gambling himself, despite not having any coins for it. After a couple of minutes, he felt safe enough to peer back around the corner and found the guard wasn't at his post. This seemed like the perfect opportunity to try and sneak in to see what was behind the secret door. Trying to appear casual while also looking for any sign of the guard or any other R shirts hanging around, Murasaki made his way to where he thought he'd seen the door. Finding the door itself proved to be a lot more difficult than he thought it would be. He couldn't seem to find any sort of seam anywhere to distinguish its presence. Then he froze as a hand dropped onto his shoulder. What do you think you're doing, kid? Murasaki nearly jumped out of his skin and looked up. Why are you back here? It was the guy who had been guarding the secret entrance earlier, and Murasaki was quickly trying to think of an excuse. Noticing a poster on the wall, Murasaki launched into a tale.
I got lost. My dad was so wrapped up in the machines, I think he forgot I was here. I was trying to find him back, and then I saw this cool poster and got distracted.
The R guard narrowed his eyes at the boy. Well, there ain't no one back here, so scram!
Right, of course, will do.
Murasaki wasted no time getting out of there. He even left the building, as it seemed the guard was keeping a careful watch on the boy after that. Once outside, Murasaki realized he had almost done something really stupid. If there were any problems beyond that hidden door, what was he supposed to do? He didn't have any Pokemon with him to help him should danger arise. He was lucky. That thought brought back to his mind his original goal. He needed to get some Pokeballs so that his Oddish could be patched up and ready to go with Murasaki to Lavender Town. The mystery of the game corner still nagged at him, but since there was nothing he could do about it right then, he pushed it away and focused on getting to the Pokemart. After purchasing a handful of Pokeballs, Murasaki returned to the Pokemon Center, and his little Oddish was then taken back for some care. The boy waited for a while, and soon the Oddish was returned and Murasaki was ready to get back on the road. Taking a little more caution, Murasaki left toward the east of Celadon again, and this time made it to the Gates of Saffron. Unfortunately, when he entered, he was immediately met by a guard that informed him Saffron City was closed to visitors for the time being.
But what about all the trainers going for the gym badges? You can't keep them from battling Sabrina.
I'm sorry, young man, but we are dealing with a situation at the moment, and it is unsafe for anyone to travel through Saffron.
Well, what am I supposed to do now? This is, like, the only way to Lavender Town.
Lavender Town? Oh, well, that's easy. Just use the underground tunnel.
Use what?
The guard led Murasaki to the door, opened it, and pointed over toward a building just a little way off. In there, you'll find the path that leads right underneath Saffron and will get you closer to Lavender Town.
Really? Cool! Thanks, mister.
Yes, anytime. And if you get the chance, he said in a hoarse voice, bring me something to drink. We'll call it even then. The guard grinned.
Sure thing.
Murasaki gave a thumbs up to the guard and headed out in the direction he'd been pointed. Inside the building, he passed someone muttering about losing supplies down in the tunnel. Murasaki descended the steps and continued marching for the other end, excited to get to Lavender Town. Hey, look who it is! Murasaki froze on the spot. He recognized that voice, and if he was right about who it was, then that meant his two buddies were right there with him. How's our young little friend, Mura? Murasaki sighed and turned to find the trio that were always picking on him.
Hi, Zeke.
The leader of the little group stepped back in mock hurt. Ouch! I don't think little Mura here is happy to see me.
Well, that ain't good, chimed in a short, scrawny boy to Zeke's left. Don't you like to see your friends, Mura?
Oh, no. I just love it when you guys drop by.
Murasaki's voice dripped with sarcasm.
I don't believe you, Zeke replied. I don't think you're being very sincere.
Whatever gave you that idea?
The thicker bully on the other side of Zeke spit out a wad of gum.
Looks like Mura's forgetting his respect. Maybe he thinks he's all tough now that he's got a Pokemon.
Zeke straightened and pulled out a Pokeball.
Well, I guess it's time to teach you a lesson. Let's battle.
Part 38. A Trippy Tale. Violet's plan was to get away from the members of the Rocket Gang that had tried to nab her in the Pokemon Center room. Jumping out the window, her Spearow had broken ahead of time, had been successful as far as that was concerned. In fact, the quick thinking and action to manage that was impressive. However, immediately the girl was presented with a new problem. The window had been on the upper floor, and a hard landing awaited her below.
Spur! Over here!
As Violet called out for her Spearow, she also grabbed another Pokeball and released her Pidgey.
Pilot, grab on!
Talons cut into Violet's arms as her two flying Pokemon each gripped one. They beat their wings as hard as they could, and while they couldn't keep her aloft, they significantly helped in slowing her down. Her trajectory sent her to the top of a small cliff, just beyond Misty's gym. The landing sent a shock of pain around her ankle. But she didn't have time to worry about that. Violet whirled around to see if she had been followed and saw no sign of the rocket thugs.
Thanks, Pilot Spur,
she said, giving each of her birds a nod. Then Violet winced as they pulled their talons from her arm. She returned the Pokemon to their balls, and then the door to the Pokemon Center opened, and the two would-be kidnappers spilled out onto the street looking wildly around for any sign of Violet. It was the woman who spotted her, and pointed her out to the large man who Violet had encountered twice before.
Oh, come on!
She groaned. Then she popped up onto her feet and began to run. She knew her home lay to the east, but the way those rocket thugs continued to find her, she was nervous they would know where she lived. So instead, she decided to head south, toward Saffron City. Rushing down ledges, heading downhill outside of Cerulean was difficult and was done with a limp. Each jolt sent another shock of pain, and Violet barely caught herself a few times from tumbling forward. That was until a sort of cream-colored object that maybe resembled a rope stretched out across her path and caught her foot just as she was lifting it up. The result was Violet sailing through the air and landing hard in the grass.
Ow!
She rubbed her knee, which had taken the brunt of the fall, and had managed to dig a divot into the ground.
What the heck was that?
A Pokemon cry whined out in response, and Violet jerked around to see if her pursuers had found her. A bush rustled, and then a Meowth came crawling out and started to examine its wounded tail. Violet realized that it was the tail she must have tripped on. Her first thought was that the Meowth deserved its moment of pain for what it did to her. She felt guilty almost immediately after. It wasn't like the Pokemon had done that to her on purpose.
Hey, I'm sorry. Do you need help?
She stuck her hand out to comfort the Meowth, and in one quick slash, the Pokemon scratched it, causing her to flinch back.
Ow! Hey! I was just trying to help you!
Violet felt a flash of anger again, but took a deep breath and let it out slowly.
I'm really sorry you got hurt, but if you want to come with me, I can get you to the Pokemon Center. They'll help you feel all better.
Violet, moving a lot slower than the first time, reached out again, and when the Meowth made a menacing sound, the girl knew it was still planning on swiping at her.
All right, fine,
the girl snapped. Then she pulled out a Pokeball and chucked it straight at the Meowth. It smacked it right in the face, and soon the Pokemon was sucked inside. The ball rocked once and burst apart, releasing the Pokemon. Growling in frustration, Violet grabbed for another Pokeball, and she wound up to toss it, and just as it left her hand, she realized it was not the normal colors. Instead of a red top, it had a blue one, and it took a second for her memory to catch up. It was one of the balls that the lady in Mount Moon had given her. She also remembered she was supposed to keep those ones for more difficult-to-catch Pokemon, but, well, it was too late now. The ball smacked the Meowth, and it was probably getting sick of being pelted by Pokeballs. The ball opened up and sucked in the Meowth, and then it rocked twice before clicking shut. Violet had just captured another new Pokemon. Granted, this time she was just trying to help it get to a Pokemon Center. Climbing back to her feet, she groaned at the pain in her ankle, and she moved over and picked up the ball. Then she started shuffling her way back down the hill. She wanted to run again, but she didn't think she could, and just hoped she wasn't going to be spotted. She was nearly to the gates of the next city when she heard a voice shout out, "Hey! You!" Panicking, Violet quickly darted for cover. She found a building she could duck inside, and there, she found stairs leading to an underground tunnel. Not knowing if whoever had spotted her had seen her go in, the girl kept moving despite the discomfort. As Violet wandered down the tunnel, she thought she heard footsteps coming toward her, but when she looked, there was no one anywhere. Then she realized that they were approaching from the wrong direction. The tunnel ran from north to south, and it seemed the hurried steps were coming from the west. They got closer and closer, and then they were right on top of her. Looking up, she realized that she was hearing something above her. There was even some muffled talking. The words were impossible to make out, and it was clearly not someone after her, so Violet shrugged and kept heading down her own tunnel. But after only a few more steps, the commotion above reached a new volume, and it seemed pretty clear that a Pokemon battle was taking place. Part 39. Underground Battle. Murasaki sighed.
Look, Zeke, I don't want to
But before the boy could even finish speaking, Zeke had tossed his Pokeball at Murasaki and announced his Pokemon. Go, Growlithe! Backing a few steps away, Murasaki tried again.
I'm not battling you, Zeke.
What, are you scared?
Mocked one of Zeke's buddies.
No, I just want to get to Lavender.
Well, you should be, because my Growlithe is undefeated. Of course, it's only battled like three...
Zeke's larger friend started.
Quiet, Eric.
Zeke glared at his friends for a moment before turning back to Murasaki.
Now, throw out...
Zeke trailed off when he saw his opponent wasn't standing there anymore. He had apparently taken Zeke's momentary distraction to take off down the tunnel.
Growlithe! Ember!
The fire Pokemon spit out fire toward Murasaki. The boy, hearing the command and then the burst of flames, dodged quickly to the right and felt the heat of Growlithe's ember burn up the air beside him. Whipping around, Murasaki started shouting at Zeke.
What is wrong with you? You could have set me on fire!
Zeke shrugged.
Don't want to get burned? Don't be a coward.
Murasaki gritted his teeth and chucked his Pokeball with way more force than he needed to. He would be lucky if he didn't break it.
Fine. Stunner, absorb.
His Pokeball released the Oddish, and it smiled enthusiastically to being let out. but then it saw the Growlithe standing over it. The poor grass Pokemon began to shake. Zeke and his two companions stared at the new arrival in astonishment for 5 whole seconds. Then they burst out laughing.
What is that?
Zeke forced out through his laughter.
I thought you had a Pokemon, not a vegetable from your garden.
Murasaki clenched his fists and glared through narrowed eyes. He knew he was in trouble. He had a Pokemon with pretty much no battle experience except that one close fight with the Mankey, and his Pokemon was a grass type, which was not a good matchup for the Growlithe in front of them. To top it all off, it hadn't listened to him, which tossed away their advantage at a preemptive strike.
Stunner! Absorb!
The little grass Pokemon glanced over at its trainer, and then back at the fiery Growlithe in front of it, and launched an object toward it. Murasaki was not sure what had just happened, as that wasn't what Absorb looked like. The object struck the Growlithe and began to sprout vines that wrapped around the Pokemon.
Ooh, the scary seed, Zeke mocked. Let's get this over with. Growlithe, Ember.
A spurt of fire singed the Oddish, and it cried out in pain. Murasaki was about to call another command, but then the little Pokemon plunged its vines into the ground, firmly planting itself there in the underground tunnel.
Burn it again, Growlithe.
Another burst of fire and another cry from the grass Pokemon. It looked pretty damaged, and Murasaki reached for his Pokeball to return it and give up the fight. He didn't want to lose to Zeke, but he couldn't watch his new Pokemon take any more damage.
Stunner, reach!
Before he could finish, the Oddish reached out its leaves and started to drain energy from the Growlithe. There was also something being sapped out through the vines that had wrapped around the beast and sending it back to Murasaki's Pokemon. And it was gaining something from the soil as well. Murasaki couldn't believe what he was witnessing. His little partner was restoring health from all sorts of places with moves that he didn't know it had. In fact, it shouldn't have had them at all. He had skimmed what Oddish generally knew and what they usually learned first, and nothing Murasaki watched matched any of that. That is, nothing except the Absorb move. Zeke looked a little annoyed the fight wasn't over yet.
Must be a little hardier than we realize, Growlithe. Still, it isn't any match for your firepower. Just keep lighting it up.
Growlithe shot more fire at Oddish and barely managed to hit it, which was surprising, since the grass Pokemon had not moved. Zeke frowned a little at that. Murasaki took time to look over the Growlithe and realized it was looking tired.
Stunner, you're doing great! Absorb again!
The Oddish, still a little more crispy than usual, was indeed looking healthier than after the first two attacks. The boy was realizing that he had lucked out with his Pokemon. It may have been the last pick, but somehow nobody had seen the talent it hid, and so he had probably gotten the best one. It took 2 more embers before Growlithe's knee buckled, and Zeke finally became aware that something was wrong.
Growlithe, return!
A beam of light sucked up the Growlithe into the Pokeball in Zeke's hand. He scoffed and offered a condescending smirk, though his eyes did not relay the same kind of arrogance and confidence he was trying to display.
Looks like your Oddish has had enough. No point in killing the pitiful plant. But I'd be cautious coming back around, Mura. I might not be so merciful next time.
With a jerk of his head, the jerk and his 2 bully pals headed out of the tunnel from the side Murasaki had come in. Once they were gone, Murasaki rushed over and plucked up his Oddish and spun him around.
Stunner, you were amazing! I can't believe you stood toe-to-toe with that Growlithe. I think you've really earned your name, buddy. You certainly stunned me, and you didn't even have to use Stun Spore.
At those words, the Oddish stretched its leaves toward Murasaki, trying to stun him once again. Part 40. Gloomy Weather. In the underground tunnel, Violet continued to watch an uninteresting ceiling as she heard continued shouts and noise indicating the Pokemon battle. Muffled sounds and no visuals made it sort of pointless, and yet it caught her attention and she remained. Part of it might have been the fact that she was tired and did not feel like hobbling along anymore at that moment. Then, to the girl's surprise, something interesting did happen. First, she wasn't sure she had heard the crackling and crumbling sound, but when the ceiling started to chip and drop small bits of debris, she knew the sounds were real. Just a few tiny roots poked out where the crack had appeared, and it seemed that whatever Pokemon was up there must be trying to absorb nutrients from the ground. Violet started flipping through pages of Pokemon research in her mind. It seemed likely that the Pokemon in question was a grass type. Vines and things used for battling or binding up an opponent were things she had read about. And absorbing energy from other Pokemon could happen. But she didn't remember anything about getting energy from the ground itself. Another minute, and then the battle went quiet. A few moments after that, and the roots suddenly vanished back up to wherever they had come from. Violet moved to stand directly under the spot to see if she could get a better vantage point. But nothing was gained except some dust in her eye when something above caused the ground to vibrate a little. Probably someone jumping up and down in victory. Realizing the battle was over, and remembering that she could still be in danger, Violet cleaned out her eyes as best she could and started back down the tunnel to the other side. At the top of the steps, a trainer approached Violet and asked her if she had a male Nidoran.
No, sorry, I don't have any kind of Nidoran.
The trainer shrugged and headed into the tunnel and mumbled something about maybe someone in Cerulean wanted to trade. Violet's thoughts were so occupied with the rocket people who kept coming after her, so her mind immediately went to how helpful that trainer could be. Her pursuers could possibly be slowed down if they started coming through the tunnel to find her. Heading outside, Violet found that the day was no longer very nice. The sky was gray, and she got the feeling it might rain. There was even a strong, chilly breeze coming against her from the south. Violet didn't want to get stuck out there as the weather got worse, and so she tried to move faster along the path to get to the city before any rain arrived. She didn't make it. As Violet was going along, she tried to take a shortcut through some grass, but the ground there was a lot more uneven, and it made traveling with her injured ankle a lot harder. Before long, she took a spill, shouting as she went down. A moment after hitting the dirt, there was a flash of light. Rolling over, Violet groaned as she looked at the sky. She waited for the boom of thunder and more flashes of lightning to herald the rain. But that didn't happen. There was no boom, and there was no more lightning. She was pretty sure she felt a drop of rain hit her cheek, though.
One flash of thunderless lightning? That doesn't seem right. I thought there was always thunder with lightning.
Getting back to her feet, the girl trudged her way back onto the path, realizing the shortcuts weren't going to be so short. As she did, a funny sensation came over her, and she couldn't place what it was. Shivering due to the odd sense as much as to the chill in the air, Violet tried to speed up. After a few feet, she slowed down and started to examine the area around her. She had started to recognize the sensation and was pretty sure she was being watched.
Hello? Who's out there?
Her only response was two more drops from the sky, one hitting her wrist and the other connected with the top of her head. Slowly, she lowered a hand to her belt and grabbed a Pokeball, all while still trying to find the source of her discomfort. Having a Pokemon at her side would make her feel a lot better. And what better Pokemon to have in the rain than...
Mizu, come on out!
The Pokeball opened, and V emerged. The girl frowned, thinking she had grabbed the wrong ball. Then, she realized what happened. Mizu wasn't with her. The horsey had been poisoned, and so Violet had left her partner with the Pokemon Center nurse while she went to her room to rest. But then she had to escape the rocket thugs and...
Oh no, 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 no! Mizu!
V, the pale-furred Eevee, looked up at Violet, confused, as if to say, I'm not Mizu! But then the Pokemon's ear twitched, and it immediately turned around and stared off into the grass toward a line of trees. His sudden alertness made Violet even more uneasy.
What? What's out there?
A low growl was V's only response before lunging into the tall grass. Part 41. Fake Lightning.
V, come back!
The pale-furred Eevee didn't heed Violet's command and was dashing through tall grass chasing something. The girl hadn't seen anything out there, but V had. Or at least, he had sensed a threat. Violet was sure Team Rocket had finally caught up with her, and were lurking out in that line of trees the Pokemon was headed toward. More drops of rain had landed on the girl, and she was sure she was about to get soaked. There was just no way she could make it to town before it got worse, not with her ankle still messed up from that fall. There was another flash of light without any follow-up thunder. Confused, she looked up at the sky and got a raindrop directly in her eye. She blinked and wiped at it, and then caught a glimpse of V again. He had stopped running toward the trees and was now looking around a little confused. His right ear twitched a couple of times, and then he turned to stare right at Violet. An unnerving feeling crept through Violet.
Why is V acting so odd?
She thought to herself.
And why is he just sitting there, staring at me?
It occurred to the girl that V wasn't staring at her, but at something behind her. Terrified, Violet slowly started to turn to face the threat lurking there, and she was met with a flash of light and nothing. V cried out, and Violet whirled back to see him rushing through the grass in a new direction.
What in the world is going on?
She wondered. Occasionally, there would be another fake lightning flash, and V would stop, look around, and head in another direction each time.
What's out there, V? What are you chasing?
The Eevee was too focused to offer any kind of response. Not that he would be able to communicate it to Violet anyway. The girl was feeling a little bit better, as whatever was happening probably had nothing to do with the Rocket Gang. Still, it was really odd.
Maybe he needs a little help.
Violet took her other Pokeballs and started releasing her flyers to help scope out the field.
Lucky, Pilot, Spur, spread out and help V.
The Zubat, Pidgey, and Spearow shot straight up into the air and then soared off in three different directions. Almost immediately, there came cries from the trio, and the fake lightning flashes increased in frequency. Violet felt a sudden push of air beside her. She looked quick and caught only a brief glimpse of a yellowish color before there was another flash.
Wait, is that a Pokemon? It must be using teleport. And if it's a Pokemon, then... Lucky! Supersonic!
The Zubat swooped down and let out a shriek as it flew across the field.
Hopefully that confuses the thing,
Violet said. Then it was time to put the other two flyers to work.
Pilot, find whatever is out there and throw some sand in its eye. Spur, peck it.
Both of the Pokemon cried out in confirmation and circled around and managed a figure-eight pattern where they crossed each other in the center. There was another flash of light and V cried out. The Pidgey and Spearow shot down toward the target. Suddenly, there was a lot of sand kicked up in the air, and Spur let out a victory cry after making contact. Another flash of light, and whatever was teleporting around popped into existence right in front of Violet, knocking her into the air a couple of feet before she landed hard on her back in some tall grass. Blinking back some tears from the shock of pain, Violet tried to catch her breath so she could call out to her team again. Something rustled in the grass nearby, and suddenly a creature landed right on top of Violet. She let out a scream and swatted what she later realized was a Rattata off of her and right toward the yellow Pokemon that had knocked her over. There was another flash of light as the teleporting Pokemon was startled away. Only, it reappeared right in the same exact location, but facing away from Violet now. Violet could see now it was an Abra that had everyone in a tizzy, and she almost called for her team to attack again. Before sound left her open mouth, however, she realized she had an opportunity to try and catch it right there. Slowly, she pulled out one of her Pokeballs and sat up as quietly as she could. Violet pulled her arm back, lined up the shot, and just as she tossed the ball, V came running in and leapt at the Pokemon. It was gone in another flash of light. V and the ball met in the air, and it smacked the ball away from it, causing it to sail right back toward Violet, where it knocked her in the head.
Ow! V, come on!
Picking the ball back up, Violet got to her feet and started to scan for the Abra again. When there was another flash, she turned, only to hear a crack of thunder to accompany it, signaling that real lightning had come to join the party.
Great. This just keeps on getting better and better,
she said, rubbing her forehead where the ball had hit her. And then the rain came down. Hard. Part 42. Real Lightning. Thunder rumbled all around as rain soaked the earth. Violet was drenched and miserable. She was feeling particularly annoyed at the Eevee with the pale fur that was darting off once again after sending a Pokeball right to her forehead. She had accidentally sent out V earlier when she had meant to bring out Mizu. She had been reluctant to let him out since he had been so disobedient lately, which had caused a girl to think Violet had stolen the Pokemon. Then he ran off, chasing something teleporting all around the area when Violet had just wanted to reach Vermilion City before getting caught in a storm. Clearly, that plan had not worked out. To make matters worse, Violet's ankle still hurt, Mizu had been left at the Cerulean City Pokemon Center, and she had been nearly captured by Team Rocket. Again.
And I've only got one badge still, while that pink hair girl probably has already gotten her second and almost a third. I got the pleasure of having to rely on her and that brat for help just to get to town, and I lost my dad.
It all felt completely hopeless. Violet wanted to just flop onto the ground and give up. But then there was a brilliant flash of light, brighter than all the others that had been happening before. It was followed almost instantly by an explosion of thunder that the poor startled girl felt through her bones. Violet was instantly hit by a missile in the form of her Zubat, and Pilot, the Pidgey, was right behind it. They were both flapping their wings wildly as they scrambled at Violet's hands.
All right, just let me grab them.
She shook the pair off long enough to grab their Pokeballs and zap them back in and out of the frightening storm.
We can't stay out here.
She announced her decision to no one, really.
The lightning is too close.
She looked around for her other two Pokemon, but it was getting very difficult to see through the downpour of rain.
V, Spur, where are you? We've got to go!
There was no response at first, and then there was another blinding flash followed by another blast of thunder. Blinking away the spots, Violet tried again.
V, Spur, come on!
When there was still no response from her Pokemon, Violet threw her hands up in the air.
This is pointless! How could they hear anything with all this rain and thunder?
Since she wasn't about to abandon her Pokemon, the only thing she had left was to search for them. Of course, that wasn't going to be very easy with the sky so dark, all the tall grass, and so much rain. There was another flash of light, and Violet reflexively ducked her head in preparation for the thunder. But no boom followed, and she realized that this time it must have been that Abra again. If that was true, then maybe one of her Pokemon would aim for it. She whipped around and fought her way through her now heavy clothing to get closer to the teleporting Pokemon. As Violet drew near, she saw something explode from out of the rain and take a swipe at Abra. It connected, and once again the Pokemon vanished in a flash of light. She ignored the disappearance as she tried to follow the streak that had gone by instead.
Spur, is that you?
The Spearow let out a sharp cry of excitement as it shot through the rain, weaving around a sudden streak of lightning.
Hey, Featherbrain, you're gonna get yourself killed up there!
Spur offered a casual caw, seemingly unconcerned over Violet's worry.
Well, since you're having so much fun out there, can you locate V so we can get to town?
With an affirmative call, the Spearow went on the hunt for the missing Eevee. Violet followed as best she could, not wanting to lose sight of Spur so that she would know when V was found. But the curtain of water was hard to see beyond, and her eyes were constantly pelted with fat drops of rain. The girl was almost constantly having to look away and blink out the water before looking back, and then the lightning seemed to spite her and flash brilliantly just as she had cleared her eyes, causing her to go blind momentarily. Finally, there was a call of excitement from Spur, and Violet plowed ahead, following her ears instead of eyes. Through the rain, she could see the Abra just floating above the ground again. It was facing away from her, and it wasn't until there was a slight flick of the tail that Violet realized that, just between her and the Abra, was another Pokemon. She thought it could be V, but it was hard to tell with all its fur soaked.
V!
Violet hissed.
V, come here!
If it was V, then either she was too quiet, or the Eevee was intentionally ignoring her. She thought about grabbing his ball and just returning the Pokemon. Then she thought of a better idea. Getting a little closer, Violet grabbed the Pokeball that had connected with her forehead. She watched V closely, just waiting for him to pounce. The tail stopped moving, and she knew the moment had arrived. V leapt at the Abra, and Violet released the Pokeball. The Eevee connected with the teleporter just a hair before the Pokeball. The yellow creature only had a moment to give a look of surprise before it was sucked inside. It dropped to the ground. V turned around, also surprised by the sudden vanishing of the Abra, and Violet wasted no time aiming his Pokeball at him to return him in a flash.
All right, I'll just grab this Pokeball, and then we need to get to Vermilion.
But when Violet arrived at the spot where she thought the ball had dropped, there was nothing there.
Oh, come on! Did I just lose another Pokemon?
A streak of lightning hit a nearby pond with a crash of thunder behind it, as if to tell Violet very loudly that yes, she did. Part 43. The Tomboy. Emerging from the other end of the underground tunnel, Murasaki stepped out into the sunshine. Large, puffy clouds floated along the bright blue sky. In contrast, he could see that there was a nasty-looking storm somewhere to the southwest.
I'm glad I'm not in that,
the boy said to himself.
At least for now,
came a softer voice. Murasaki jumped and whirled to find a girl leaning against the outside wall of the underground entrance. She was tossing a Pokeball lightly into the air and catching it in her gloved hand.
What?
Murasaki asked.
That storm? I think it's over Vermilion City right now, but the wind is blowing this way, so...
The girl trailed off as she used the fingers on her free hand to start counting. She snapped her gum and looked back at Murasaki.
Maybe 30 minutes until it reaches us?
The boy frowned.
How would you know that?
The girl tossed the Pokeball higher than before and popped off the wall. She took a casual step toward Murasaki as she caught the device in her hand again. She shrugged and said with a smirk,
I was a Dragonair in another life, maybe.
Rolling his eyes, Murasaki turned his back on the girl to face the route ahead.
If you're right, then I need to hurry to town.
Celadon's closer.
Yeah, it's also where I just came from.
Sure, but I doubt you'll reach Lavender before the storm gets here.
Murasaki glanced back at the girl with disgust.
It isn't that far. How slow do you think I am?
Hey, I'm not saying you're slow, but there are plenty of trainers out there itching for a battle. They're gonna slow you down.
I won't let them.
The girl looked Murasaki up and down.
I don't think you'll be able to stop them.
I don't really care what you think.
Then why are you still here talking to me?
What? You keep talking to me!
You could have walked away at any time.
You're right. I'm leaving now.
Murasaki started down the route, annoyed he had let the first stranger he ran across to get to him so easily. He had already been delayed enough by Zeke.
All right, fine,
the girl said.
I'll come with you. Stop begging, though. Sheesh.
Beg? I didn't beg. I didn't even ask.
You coming or what?
The girl said, already having passed Murasaki.
I thought you were in a hurry.
Gritting his teeth, Murasaki rushed ahead to catch up with the girl. He couldn't let her think she was leading him to Lavender Town, but he also didn't feel like running the entire way either, and he was pretty sure if he tried to pass her, that's exactly what would have to happen.
Why are you doing this?
Murasaki asked.
Doing what?
Following me.
The girl furrowed her brow.
Following you? Who just had to catch up, Buster?
That's not the point. You seem to want to go to Celadon, so why are you going to Lavender Town?
I told you, the trainers are all over this route.
So? I can handle myself.
Look, I'm sure you could, but it would slow you down. But I find walking with someone else deters a lot of the challengers.
Murasaki looked around and noticed a few different trainers battling along the route. Some were trying to catch Pokemon, and others were clearly looking for someone to challenge, but didn't give the girl or himself a second glance.
Okay, so you might have a point there.
Just looking out for you, kid. You're welcome.
Kid? Kid? I'm not any younger than you. Or at least, not by a lot.
You sure? I'm guessing you're what, 10 years old? And just starting on your journey?
Yeah, just like you.
The girl laughed.
Don't insult me. I'm 11.
Murasaki rolled his eyes. The age difference was negligible, and he was even more annoyed at her sense of superiority. Still, it was nice to just walk right to Lavender Town, which they reached with plenty of time to spare before the storm.
So, where to now, kid?
Please stop calling me that. My name is Murasaki.
Ah, okay, Mura. I'm Beck.
The girl extended her hand out for a shake.
Murasaki, not Mura.
He corrected as he shook her hand.
Nice to meet you.
Back at ya. But again, where are we heading next? Pokemon Tower?
That's exactly where I'm going. I'm gonna catch myself a ghastly.
Part 44. Lightning Strikes.
Oh, come on! Where is it?
Violet searched all through the grass, looking for the Pokeball that had her newly caught Abra in it. But with the torrent of rain cascading down from a dark, roaring sky, it was a nearly impossible task. Then, just as she was about to give up, there was a flash of lightning, and she saw something floating in the nearby water.
Is that...
Violet squinted through the rain and stepped a little closer, stretching her neck as far as she could to try and see if it was her Pokeball. It looked like it could be, but she couldn't be sure unless she went in after it. And that wasn't going to happen. She'd already seen the lightning strike the water once. Looking up in the sky, she caught a glimpse of movement through the drops of water pelting her face.
Spur! Think you can help me out?
The Spearow banked around and swooped over the water.
You see that in there?
Violet said, pointing out what might be her Pokeball.
Can you grab it?
Spur gave an affirmative caw and swooped around to snatch up the Pokeball. A flash of lightning streaked nearby, and the Spearow pulled up from the water and veered left to make sure it didn't get struck. Then it made another pass, this time swooping over the object and the water while flying toward Violet. It dove toward the ball and snatched it up in its talons as more lightning flashed that was followed by booming thunder. Beating its wings furiously, Spur was closing in on Violet. The lightning almost seemed to chase the Pokemon, taking shots at it that the Spearow dodged. Just as it tossed the ball into Violet's hands, there was an explosion of light, and Violet blacked out. When she came to, she had skidded through muddy ground in the tall grass. Her body ached everywhere, and she could just hear the last rumblings of the boom of thunder that must have accompanied the lightning bolt that had struck nearby.
Spur, you okay?
Violet's voice was weak, and she was struggling to muster up the strength to sit back up. A small cry from the Spearow answered the girl, and it did not comfort her. The poor thing sounded hurt.
I'll be right there. Just give me a minute to get up.
It took a lot of effort to get to her knees, and as soon as she did, her head began to swim. Her vision blurred, but she caught a glimpse of a wing flapping lazily. Violet felt like she was going to pass out at any moment. So, instead of climbing to her feet, she fumbled around for Spur's Pokeball. Swaying back and forth, Violet aimed it as best she could toward her Pokemon, and then summoned it inside. And then she tipped over, and consciousness was lost. Violet could tell that there was something really bright beyond her eyelids, and it was giving her an awful headache. She knew opening her eyes would just make it worse, and so she covered her face with one arm.
Oh, you're awake!
The sound of another voice nearby caused Violet to jerk back, and she hit her head against something hard, causing it to throb harder. Instinctively, she had opened her eyes as well and was blinded by the light from a lamp.
Whoa! Hey, sorry, I didn't mean to scare you.
Violet still couldn't see very well, blinded by the light and pain, but she did start to realize she was no longer being rained on. She could still hear it coming down, but it seemed more muffled. Then she pat the ground next to her and finding it wasn't the ground at all, but sheets, blankets, and a mattress.
Where? Vermilion City Pokemon Center. Oh, and how? My sister and I worked to bring you inside.
Violet blinked a couple of times, trying to adjust to the light, and soon she could see the room, and, in one corner, was a chair, a table with an open book placed on it, and standing next to them was a friendly-looking woman. Rubbing her temples, Violet offered a weak smile to the woman.
Thank you.
The woman offered a smile and gave a slight bow of her head.
Of course. Wasn't like we were just gonna leave you laying out there in the storm.
I'm not even sure what happened out there.
Oh, we saw the whole thing,
chirped an excited voice as a girl rushed in.
We were at the underground entrance and waiting for the storm to pass when we saw you running around trying to catch the Abra. Good job, by the way.
Violet frowned as she tried to keep up with the high voice that was causing her head to hurt even more.
And then kakashoom! The lightning hit the ground really close to you and you went flying.
The loud sound effects made Violet wince and the woman seemed to notice.
Not so loud.
Oh, sorry.
So I was hit by lightning? Basically,
the woman replied almost apologetically.
You're lucky to be alive.
Yeah, and then when we saw that happen, we decided we couldn't let you just keep laying there. So we ran out into the storm to get you.
Violet was stunned by the news that she had nearly died. But then that reminded her Spur had been right by her when the lightning had hit. What had happened to him? She immediately felt for her Pokeballs and found they weren't there. A quick scan of the room turned up empty as well.
My Pokemon, where are they?
She asked hesitantly.
Oh, we turned most of them into the nurse. They're being well taken care of.
Most? Well, yeah, you had too many on you. And the nurses have to limit how many can be cared for at a time, you know.
The younger of the two said.
Too many?
Violet thought to herself. Her head hurt too much to think it all through, and so she decided to just get some answers out of those that rescued her.
How many did I have? 7, I think. Right, Rosella?
Yep, the last one is in this drawer.
The girl pulled open the drawer and tossed a blue and white ball onto the bed near Violet. With a sigh of relief, Violet knew that if there was 7, then that meant Spur had made it 2. She took the ball tossed to her and saw it was Paris that was inside. That was the only one who hadn't needed to be patched up.
Wait a minute,
Violet said, suddenly connecting some dots. She looked at the young woman and said,
did you just call her Rosella?
Of course she did. That's my name.
As in Rosella Ratchet? As in the most recent Indigo League champion?
Part 45. 150 or more to see. Violet's mouth hung open as she stared at the two sisters. She was starstruck to learn that she had been rescued by the most recent Indigo League champion, Rosella Ratchet, and her older sister, Ruby.
So, why are you here? In Vermilion?
We're leaving Kanto,
Rosella said.
What? Why?
Well,
Ruby started.
We've caught almost every Pokemon that is known here, and...
And we have a friend who's been finding new ones in Johto, so we're going to see if there's even more different Pokemon out in the world.
More kinds of Pokemon?
Violet asked. Then her mind stumbled upon a memory of Mount Moon and the pink-haired girl. She had Pokemon with her Violet had never read about.
So, there are more than 146 Pokemon out there?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, there's at least 149 in Kanto, with the legendary birds.
Yeah, but they don't really exist, right? They're just legend?
Ruby shrugged.
It is possible they do, but...
Oh no, they definitely do. I saw one.
We don't know if that was...
Yes, I do. There's no way it wasn't Moltres. Nothing else in that cave could have been burning that bright and emitting that much heat.
Ruby held up her hands in surrender.
Okay. In any case, yes, there are more Pokemon out there. Another trainer from our town has found at least 10 new types of Pokemon in Johto.
Wow.
Violet breathed.
I have a lot of catching up to do.
You're well on your way,
Rosella encouraged.
After you face Lieutenant Surge, you have, what, 3 badges? That's almost halfway.
Violet dropped her head.
No. I actually skipped Cerulean City's gym. I've only got a Boulder badge.
You skipped a gym?
Rosie, that's rude.
The older sister offered a sympathetic glance.
Did you not feel ready for that battle? No, it's not like that.
Violet looked up.
It's, well, I've been having a lot of trouble with a group of criminals called the Rocket Team or Rocket League or something.
This got the attention of both the sisters.
You mean Team Rocket?
Ruby asked. Violet's eyes locked on Ruby's.
Yeah, maybe that's their name. But how do you know them? I only ever learned of their existence when I first went through Mount Moon.
Taking a deep breath, Rosella began to explain.
They're a really evil group. I don't know a lot about what they do, but I know they experiment on Pokemon and use them as tools. They don't care if they hurt them or even kill them.
Our professor, Professor Thistle, and his partner used to work for them. He told us a little.
Ruby added.
But then we saw it firsthand, too. When we were in Lavender Town, we saw them. We saw...
It was Rosella's turn to fall quiet as her gaze dropped.
They killed a Pokemon.
What?
Violet exclaimed.
Why?
Poor Cubone.
Rosella muttered.
They killed a Cubone?
Violet couldn't believe what she was hearing.
No, a Marowak.
Ruby answered.
It was trying to protect the Cubone from Team Rocket. They were trying to steal their skulls.
That's awful.
And then?
Rosella looked back, her eyes aflame.
Then they tried to recruit me. Can you believe that? As if I would join those.
Ruby placed a hand on Rosella's shoulder, and the younger girl trailed off and took a deep breath.
They're even worse than I thought,
Violet said.
They tried to steal my Pokemon and nearly killed me, but I thought that was more of an accident. And since then, they have come after me several more times, most recently in Cerulean, where I had to jump out of a window to get away. What's worse is I had to leave my horsey behind since it was still in the nurse's care.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
Not a big deal? She was my starting partner, and I just left her alone, and who knows when I'll get her back!
Rosella tilted her head quizzically.
But you could just have them transport the Pokemon here.
What?
The Pokemon centers. They all have ways of quickly sending Pokemon from one center to another. You could just pick up your horsey here.
Really?
Yep.
That's wonderful news!
Rosella grinned.
Glad I could help.
All right, Rosie. I think that's enough. This girl needs some rest, and we need to get to the boat. It leaves in just a couple of hours.
Right. Okay. Well, it was nice to meet you.
Violet.
Violet. Maybe we'll run into you in the future.
The two sisters started gathering their things.
Oh.
Ruby said before they walked out the door.
If you're heading in to face Lieutenant Surge, just know he uses electric-type Pokemon. I don't know if you have anything to counter that, but there's a cave not far outside of town. Plenty of Diglett live there. Maybe catch one of them to help you out in earning that badge. Thanks for the advice. I might just do that.
With a few more farewells, the Ratchet sisters were gone, and Violet was left in a now very quiet room. Her head felt like it could relax, and the headache began to subside a little. Violet wanted to get moving and collect Mizu, but her ankle still hurt, and the headache wasn't completely gone. The bed looked very welcoming, and so she shuffled back to it, crawled in, and drifted off back to sleep.
Are you just going to stare at this thing all day, or are we actually going inside?
Huh? Sorry. It's just I've heard and read up a lot on a Pokemon Tower and have always wanted to visit it.
That's depressing.
What? Why?
You spend all your time researching about a place full of dead Pokemon? Okay, so maybe not depressing. Maybe you're just creepy.
I happen to be fascinated with Gengar. Yes, they're creepy, the way that they supposedly hide in people's shadows. But if I had one, then it would know when any others are trying to do that around me.
I guess that makes sense. If the stories were true.
If? I'll have you know, there are hundreds of accounts of that sort of thing happening.
I think it's all superstitious nonsense.
Of course you do. Is there a reason you're still hanging around me? We already made it by all those trainers.
Wouldn't want you getting lonely.
I think I'll get by.
All the same.
Hey, where do you think you're going? You have no reason to go into the tower. Ugh, that girl is so difficult.
Nice of you to join me.
I'm not joining you. I'm here to find myself a Gastly, and that is all. You you go pay respects or something.
Sure, fine. I'll do just that.
Is there a lost one I can help you find?
What? Are you talking to me?
Of course. Seems your friend already knows where she is headed.
Oh, yeah. So do I, actually. Thanks anyway. I don't see any Pokemon down here. Maybe they're on the upper levels.
Hey, mister.
What is it, kid?
Are you looking for Ghastly?
Yeah. How did you know?
You're not the first one who's come here doing that.
Tilly, I was talking to him first.
So what? I can talk to him too.
No, it isn't fair to Dust.
Hey, settle down. You seem to know your way around. Any idea where the Ghastly are?
Oh, they're everywhere.
Go away, Tilly. But she's right. They are everywhere.
Why don't I see any?
Maybe you're blind.
He's not blind, Gus.
He could be.
He's not.
Maybe.
I'm not! I'm not blind! Are they easier to find on a different floor?
You mean, find more? Maybe. They are mischievous and tricky.
Sure, but like, if there are more there, then I'm bound to run into one, right?
Oh, you're bound to run into them. All over. In fact, there's one right there.
What? Behind me? I don't see anything there.
Gus is so silly sometimes. If you turn back around, you'll see one.
Tilly!
Gus?
All right, you two. Leave the boy alone.
Fine.
Bye, mister. Good luck.
You'll need it.
To be continued.
It looks like you've been out in the rain.
Oh, yeah. I was at the cave catching a Diglett. Here, he needs to get patched up after the bubbles Mizu shot at him.
Any of your other Pokemon need recovering?
Yeah, take these two. They're doing okay, but I need everyone in tip-top shape for the gym.
Oh, you haven't heard?
Heard what?
The gym is inaccessible at the moment. The storm has been causing all kinds of trouble around town. Some trees have been blown down and are blocking the way to Vermilion Gym.
Of course they are. Well, still, might as well have a fully rested team. I'll just be up in my room, I guess.
Actually, this storm has caused all sorts of delays.
Okay, so?
So the ships aren't able to leave right now either, and there are a lot of trainers on board the SS Anne for some event.
That's cool, I guess.
Sorry, I'm not explaining myself very well. I have a pass for the ship, and once you have your Pokemon back, you could go aboard while they stay docked and get some battles in.
Oh, yeah, okay. That would be great. Especially for my new Diglett. It would be nice to get some training with him before I face off against Lieutenant Surge.
All right, I'll be back with your Pokemon soon.
Thanks. Now it is time to make some decisions. Mizu will go with me, of course, and Diglett too. But I can only take 4 more, and it's time to do some serious training. Not only do I have gym badges to earn, but if Team Rocket comes around again, I need to be ready.
To be continued. All right, Matthews. Tell me what's been happening since I've been gone. You mean since you abandoned us, betrayed us, and stole our precious specimen? That's a laugh. That specimen belonged to me. I caught it. And when I was betrayed by this organization, yeah, I took him with me. You may be the one who caught it, but it was while you were a member, and you know that anything special we catch belongs to the organization and, specifically, its leader. Look, the argument doesn't even matter anymore. I don't know where he is, and so I couldn't give him to you even if I wanted to. Why don't you tell us what you've been up to the last few years? Maybe we can retrace your steps and find it. Maybe what I've been up to is none of your business and you can buzz off. Why, you... Now, take a deep breath, Matthews. He is your superior, after all. Are you kidding me right now? He isn't even a member anymore. True, but he was more skilled than you when he recruited you, and he's likely only gotten better since then.
I knew it wouldn't be long until you showed up, White. Just as I knew you couldn't hide from us forever. I probably could have. But I had some unfinished business to see to. Unfinished business? Would this have anything to do with you challenging the Cerulean and Vermilion City gym leaders? What I do with my time really has no. We don't really care what you do out there. But you do owe us, and we would like the debt repaid before you waste too much time earning what you had already stolen. Oh, don't look so surprised. It wasn't hard to guess that you are trying to redeem yourself, which is probably why you were so willing to come here to our base as well. I'm trying to redeem myself and yet came back to join? You're not as smart as you think, are you? Oh, I've learned a lot from you and your partner back in the day. Your attempts to make me second-guess myself aren't going to work. You have come here to try and take us down once and for all. But instead, you have fallen right into Team Rocket's trap. To be continued.